Hi, today is March 7th, 2021. I'm Todd Agassa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall, and today we're really, really fortunate to have our good friend Eric Hicks with us from the great state of Pennsylvania. Eric, welcome.
How you doing, guys? Long time.
No kidding. I mean, it's, you know, it.
Doing good.
We've been reconnecting with our old friends. I mean, we've had some old friends on the podcast in the past, you know, John and I. But this year, we come to the one, for me anyway, it's the 1 year anniversary of COVID. Yesterday, that's when emergency proclamation number one went out. Actually, it was Friday in the state of Hawaii. And so it's been 1 year and 2 days for us now. And at the beginning of the year, I was telling John, I want to reconnect with some of our old friends, you know, our mutual old friends. And so really, really happy to have you on, Eric. So before we get started, because we got a lot of questions for you, I just want to bring up a couple of old topics. So one of the topics that John knows about is I spent literally a week uploading my files from my iPhone to Microsoft OneDrive in preparation for when Google starts, limiting the unlimited storage, right? And I have Office 365, what is it called? Home Edition. So I've got, a terabyte, should be plenty of space. So one of the things I've learned is that OneDrive's photo features are pretty weak compared to Google Photos. It has kind of a on this day feature, which shows you stuff that happened, on this day, a year or two, 3 years ago. And every day it seems to create a little album, a mini album of photos you created that day. But it doesn't have like facial recognition or any of that other stuff that I got used to in Google Photos. Or if it has, I can't find it. And the other thing I noticed is the OneDrive app for iOS only uploads when it's in the foreground. So, with Google Photos, it uploads whenever, right? Whenever it has reasonable bandwidth to do so.
Yeah, so you don't have to think about it. It's just, take pictures and it does its thing.
Yeah, so I opened up OneDrive for on my iPhone the other day, or yesterday actually. I said, whoa, there are 83 photos that haven't been uploaded yet, So, different way of thinking about it. But that said, I just did want to mention that OneDrive did get the ability to actually support iPhone's live photos. Those little MOV files. So that's pretty cool. And the other thing I should note is that aside from Google doing away with its unlimited storage later this summer, it's also starting to charge for features. If you want features, if you have a Google Pixel phone, you kind of get some of those features for free, but otherwise you got to subscribe to Google One, which is not expensive. It's like I think I pay $3 a month for 100 gigs of storage or something like that. But still, so stuff that used to be free, aren't.
Yeah, that's kind of like the jarring thing. It's like on one side you're like, oh, this stuff is free. And I've fallen to that too. We start using the technology and it becomes embedded in your life. And then all of a sudden, things change. And, that's happening all too much, especially in the IoT sector where you'll buy some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, surprise, we're no longer supporting that, or we're not supporting it like this. And you've built like a whole ecosystem or anything else around
that. Got it.
And kind of rug gets pulled from under you.
Yeah. In fact, I used to have a really cool, it was a local storage. Gosh, well, John probably remembers it. It was a cheap local storage device, like $50. And you could sync to it from like any device in your home on the LAN. And then you could view it outside of it, securely with a cloud. I can't think of the name. But at any rate.
I know Synology had one like that.
Oh, that's what John has.
There's been a few of them.
Yeah.
I have a QNAP. And my QNAP NAS, and you were talking about moving your photos out of Google Photos. I've just moved two albums out of Google Photos cared about over to iCloud.
Yeah.
I have an album of funny memes and everything that's, my pick me up album when I need something funny to look at, and a few other things. But yeah, I'm also in the boat of getting very annoyed with these services that lure you in and then, pull the rug out from under you. I think I'm going to do iCloud and my QNAP NAS for all the original files.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, whatever the heck that thing was, and it was a great service, is one day decided to charge for premium feature. I mean, for features that used to be standard, but now they called premium. And then one day they just shut down, and I no longer could use the device at all. It was local storage. I just couldn't use it because it depended on their cloud service.
It's like, is you have to really like think about it and try to, you know, telegraph like, all right, what am I going to do here? So,
yeah,
like one problem I had, like I went through a couple of iterations of trying to keep photos on my phone synced up everywhere else because of the fact that, you know, you change phones, accidents happen, like you know, falling in the pool maybe with a phone that's waterproof. And but you know, at one point I was using one app that would just, you know, basically when you got home, it got on your Wi-Fi, it would sync back to your network. That worked good. Problem is if you're not home and something happens between that time frame, say if you're on vacation or something like that, now you're kind of exposed between that time frame. So then I was going to start doing the Google Photos things. Then I'm like, well, at some point they're going to say, you know, this is not going to be free. Either that or they're going to say you're just storing too many photos. So personally for me, I end up going, just because I like paying, the my home route. And so I installed like the Nextcloud server.
Oh.
I have it set up, you know, here with like 15 million degrees of backup. But it's been working well for me just because of the fact that I have it set up for my phone, my wife's phone, my parents' phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, take the picture. As soon as you take it, it uploads. And like, John, like you were saying, for like, you know, folders with memes and different things, like I have a download folder, I have, you know, if you create those little collages on your phone or whatever, it'll sync all of that back too. So kind of works out, because I did have that incident where I was, you know, opening a pool and I'm, you know, backing up with the hose and I fell in and my phone it immediately died. Like, it wasn't even like it thought about it for a couple of seconds. It was just like everything just started failing on it. It was just like, you know, fingerprint sensor failed, you know, screen failed, this failed. And I was so glad that I had the photos on there, because it had photos from like my son's, you know, in the hospital, his birth, and my daughter, and just the accumulation of things over the years. And while I do have it in other places, you know, I do like having it on my phone. So, you know, I did go that route. So far, it's been working out, and especially in light of where they come back and they say, oh, well, either you need to upgrade space or do this and do that. Now, you know, I'm in charge of all of that, which, you know, is a plus and minus, because, you know, I'm in charge of it means I have to keep track of all that. But at the same time, I can add more space to whatever I need to, you know, keep everything going.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I noticed Amazon has a photo storage thing, too. You know, that's part of Prime, so, which technically I already pay for. So I was thinking of looking at that.
And maybe able to do things like spreading it out, too. That could be another option.
And, you know, one thing I didn't have in my notes that I just wanted to mention, because John and I have been wrestling with this for years now, is note-taking. And, you know, we both used to use Evernote, like, religiously. And then we both kind of, we just kind of said, you know, at one point it was getting really flaky. And you know, and I have a Premier account, but it was getting really flaky and stuff, so we just stopped using it. But and I've been using a thing called Notability on my iPad and iPhone and Mac. But the problem with it is that it doesn't, I can't use it when I'm on a Windows device, which is like when I'm at work. And so, which is, you know, kind of okay, but it'd be kind of nice. So I recently, I'm still using Notability for all my typed stuff, but when I use handwritten notes, I've been using Evernote's Penultimate, which syncs with Evernote, so I can, you know, get to it from a web browser anywhere, which is kind of neat. So I just wanted to mention that. I just noticed that Penultimate is not available for the iPhone. It's only on the iPad, I think. So there's no iPhone version, just an iPad, which is kind of weird. And Notability is everywhere except Windows and a browser, so nothing's perfect, you know?
Yeah. You got to pick and choose.
Yeah, eventually went to OneNote for all of that, and it's mostly the fact that it's Microsoft, and I think it might be around for a while because they've kept it around for 20 years so far, and that usually means something, even though it's been a second-class Office app for all 20 years of its life.
Very true.
But it's still an app, and it's still it's I have more faith in it than Evernote, and it just has more features than Apple Notes, which I would almost go to Apple Notes for all of my stuff, except I still need a few things here and there that OneNote will give me in terms of sharing and clipping and file storage and that sort of thing.
The clipping is a big thing for me, because I used to use Evernote all the time, and that was the one thing. If I'm find something interesting or whatever, do my web travels, you know, clip it, boom, you're good.
Yeah.
And then when that started to become an, you know, issue on there, and I always used to say, boy, if OneNote sync to the cloud and had a clipping feature, that would be awesome. And it finally happened, so I pretty much went back to OneNote, which was nice because I already had stuff from way back when OneNote first came out when I started using it, so it all integrated well. I still had my notes from back then, and I was like, oh, okay, so far that's what I've been using, and it's been working out fine.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. So one more topic I want to mention before we go deep into what's happened with Eric Hicks in the last 10 years since we saw him, at least in person, is, you know, we've been in touch otherwise, but I just wanted to mention that Google Recorder for the Android phones just got updated recently. And it's in a Google Recorder could do transcription for, you know, for a couple, maybe half a year already. But the neat thing now is not only does it do real-time transcription as you speak or someone else speaks, it syncs it to the cloud. And so you can go to like recorder.google.com and you can see your both your audio file and hear your audio file, I guess I should say, and see the text transcript in the cloud, you know, without your phone. And so you can copy and paste it into Word or, you know, Google Docs or whatever it is you're using. If you need a text transcript of something you said, I was thinking I'm going to start using it for my, I have a Pixel 4a as well as an iPhone, and it, which, you know, Eric is like, yeah, whatever, you know, cause he used to carry like 52 phones.
You know? Only two now. Yeah. Slimmed down a little bit.
And, which means, you know, you can do voice notes, which, you know, we could always do, but now there's a text transcript, which is very cool. So
that is, yeah.
Yeah,
because it goes back to the notes thing, because you can tie all that back into the notes thing.
Yeah,
then it becomes a complete solution.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, Eric Hicks, we have not seen each other in person literally 10 years.
Yes.
Since the last MVP summit, which was last, you know, the 10 years last week. So that was the last time we saw each other in 2011. I think that was a year we went to. Where did the Mariners play? Safeco, right?
Yes.
That was a Safeco.
Yep.
Yep, that was a Safeco. The Mariner Moose and all that other fun stuff. But so your name came up. Well, your name comes up a lot. We talk about you a lot, Eric. You know, your ears are probably burning. But your name came up last week when Ray Flores was on with us. And we're saying, oh, man, we got to talk to Eric. Because that guy was wild. I mean, he was doing stuff 15 years ago that everybody takes for granted now. But we talked to him, like, you know, at dinner and stuff, going, you did what? You're streaming video? From your home to Seattle? You know?
Yeah. And it's such a funny story about how that all came about.
But, I mean, Eric was always doing something. I think he had, like... Uh-oh, I think John's Cyloning. Yeah, John, you're having some audio. You might have to John's Cyloning for some reason. But hopefully we'll figure that out. But I was going to say, Eric, as I recall, you had like two virtual clusters geographically separated at one point to back stuff up.
Yeah, it still probably goes on. It just grew a little. It grew and then shrank. It went through a couple of different iterations, but basically I have pretty much what's equivalent to a data center here at my house, and then I have a secondary. It's not so much data center, but it is redundant in every fashion to what I have here at my parents' house.
Yeah.
So, like, anything that happens here, so basically – if I lost everything here, as long as I had internet, I could still access all the quote-unquote local resources and similarly for their side.
See, your solution was so much cooler than mine. My solution was, 15 years ago, and now I really don't have a cloud is my only solution, but 15 years ago when my parents still had their home, before my dad passed away, I used to carry like a couple of DVDs, you know, DVD-Rs over there every couple of weeks with photos and stuff on it. Because we didn't have Google Photos or, you know, a big OneDrive or anything yet. So that was my bag. And then I'd listen to Eric with his solution. I go, oh, yeah, his is so much better. Oh, I think John is still having audio.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Okay.
So it was always so much better, but it always seemed so much more complicated. But
so much cooler.
And finding the balance between that has been, you know, because like, all right, like my father, he totally gets totally upset with me because when he can't reach anything, it's like he's like tells everybody, yeah, he's got the network locked down, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and. It's probably true, but it's like, you know, it's trying to find that balance. So a lot of things that helped me, like at one point, because all my server stuff started literally as desktops. You know, I had all these desktops set up, and each one was its own little thing. And now it's, of course, grown into virtualized servers and stuff. But now I've come to get to a point where it's like all about redundancy. So I kind of took some of the stuff that I've learned being in the enterprise world and applied it at home on a much smaller scale. But it has worked a lot. And sometimes it was interesting because through my actual career, at, you know, just in IT, there was a couple of jobs where I went into the job having a better home setup than they had enterprise-wide, and actually implementing things at the job that I already had set up at home.
See, most people do stuff on the job and then take it home. You're like the opposite, man. So you know, when Ray was on, I don't think he got a ticket from you, but he did mention he got a ticket from Mike T. And and you guys are all at the same company now, just, you know, like spread apart across multiple states and countries.
Actually, no. Mike and John, I mean, Mike and Don are for the same company, and Ray, VMware. I'm in a totally different industry. I'm actually in the entertainment industry.
So what?
I'm in, you know, industry. Yeah. Who knew they needed IT? Yeah, so I'm a senior systems engineer for it used to be, and which is interesting that we bring up Ray too, because he used to be Sands. He used to work for Sands Casino.
Yeah,
and they expand everywhere. Which now, recent news just this last week, they're selling their Venetian property.
Yeah,
well, here in the Bethlehem area, and I'm in. I was at the Bethlehem property, but they had sold that like a year or so prior. So. But I've been there for a number of years, and even before then, I was working at Verizon Wireless.
Yeah, so, that's why I remember that one.
Yeah, so I've basically pretty much came at Verizon. I pretty much came full circle in my whole IT thing, because I started off as a RF engineer doing stuff for cell sites, and now came back around doing data things. But yeah, so that's what I'm doing now. However, I'm pretty heavily vested in like the technologies that Don and Mike do. So
yeah,
who never knows? Because I know so many people over there. So
that's crazy, right? Week. Yeah, that's crazy. How many of them over there?
Yeah, it really is. And every time I know like somebody that I may know, even at Verizon, I'll be looking and something pop up on LinkedIn. And it's like, yeah, not VMware. I'm like, what's going on at VMware? I got to get over there.
Well, whatever it is, they have not felt compelled to find a way to get us all in there yet.
Yes.
I am fully confident they are worming their way in to create a new special area for former MVPs to bring us all in at some point.
Well, that would be cool.
All righty. So
they're approaching it from multiple vectors, different areas of the company.
And two countries.
Eventually, they're going to have their own Area 51 of VMware that they've just created on their own.
All right, so here's the standard questions we've been asking everybody when we come in. It's kind of our, how the entertainment industry has the 10 questions thing from... Okay, so what phone are you using these days?
Believe it or not, I am still using my Note 9.
Oh, okay, Samsung.
Samsung Note 9. It's, I had that Note 8, so going back to the phone and the pool thing.
Yeah.
Remember before you had just building up of different services, from Pocket PC days, every time a new one came out, it just offered just so much more than what you previously had.
Yeah.
Now, it's not like that. Like, when I had my Note 5, the only thing I wanted was a phone that had removable storage and was waterproof.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I got that, and which was Note 8, and then I held on to that, and there really wasn't no need for me to update that, except for my wife had an older phone, so Verizon had to buy one, get one. And so I was like, well, all right, let me just go ahead and get the Note 9. And then, 5G talk was happening, but there's no 5G here. And
same here.
I was like, there's no need to upgrade just yet. And I'd rather wait to upgrade once they had a lot of that stuff solidified. That, and once Google got their Project Treble thing going, where I can get updates directly from Google as opposed to waiting for Verizon, who was notorious for getting updates to you.
I remember.
So that was the big thing. So that's why I still have the Note 9 now. And, honestly, it does everything I need. I haven't had a need. I haven't looked at the other phones like, wow, that it has this feature. And it's like, everything that I use for, it works good for.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that, because we were talking about 5G with Ray last week. And all of a sudden, Ray, in Honolulu at least. Well, first of all, AT&T doesn't have anything. Sprint, T-Mobile is now one company. I think there's like one street about 15 miles from me that has 5G.
Works halfway down that block.
You know, yeah. And then there's a couple of, you know, tiny... Because, you know, the 5G cells, they have like hardly any throw, right? I mean, they're like microcells more than anything else. And so... Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Plus, Ray was telling me his 5G is slower than LTE.
I believe it. It's like, I know a lot of people still at Verizon, Verizon Wireless, who are, you know, really working hard to get a lot of this stuff put out. And it really does sound cool. But it's like one of those things. It's like, all right, you just got to wait until it's really out in a whole bunch of areas where you can actually use it in the way where, you know, we're accustomed to using these things. And it does bring up good benefits for everyone, what we want to do, especially mobility wise, you know, IPTV, all this stuff. But until you can really, you know, drive to the store and not lose the 5G signal, it's not a big want for me now.
Yeah, exactly. It was sort of like LTE, you know. I was really excited to, you know, for LTE to hit us, and it's really great, I have to say, compared to, you know, our previous, you know, 3G kind of stuff. But it didn't really make a difference until it was really widely available. Like, well, not even LTE. I couldn't even get voice calls in my home for a while.
Oh, wow.
You know, unless I stepped outside and walked about 50 feet south.
Yeah, there's so much stuff you can do. Like, even for, like, just regular 4G now, the stuff that you couldn't do before, I've tried. Like, you know, voice over LTE and all that stuff works great. I mean, you talk about doing things back in before. I remember it being like 2003, 2004, and I'm trying to get voice over IP working over like this 2G connection. It was horrible.
Yeah. There were some really wild things back then going on too. I remember even like low res video that Microsoft Labs in China was doing on the Pocket PC. Remember that?
Yes. I used that. I was trying to use that. That was fun.
Yeah.
It just never took off.
Yeah. But, I mean, the stuff that like kids, relatively speaking, go, what? Why'd you even bother with that? You know?
But I have Netflix on my phone. I get everything I want right here.
You're right. Okay. Next. What tablet or laptop are you using these days? Or both, if you're using both.
I still have my original Surface Pro that is my pretty much day-to-day thing I've used all the time for the most part. And I have like a Surface 4 somewhere around here. Mostly those are the only thing I use. And I've been in the market like just looking to see what's new. I might look for a new Surface or something else.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back to the phone thing because a lot of stuff I do doesn't really tax it. Or the stuff that I do because it happens more on the server side or in a virtualized, you know, VDI instance, I don't need as much horsepower, you know, mobily, except for my DJ rig. So that's one thing where I do need that. But other than that, that's really the biggest thing. The Surface Book that I've been using is the original one, but it's been serving me well for a while now. I mean, it's definitely time to upgrade. It would be nice to have something with built-in LTE.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have to sit there and search around for things. So did
the Surface Pro line or even the Surface line have LTE? I thought only the Surface Go or something else did, or something crazy like that.
I think the newest Surface Pros have, believe. I thought I remember seeing it as an option when I was on the Microsoft site. So, yeah.
Would you get a Surface Neo if it ever comes into existence? The dual screen thing?
I mean, it'll be something fun to play with.
Yeah. If it's not too expensive.
Yeah. If it's not too expensive, it'll be something fun to play with.
Yeah. I'm afraid it's going to be like $3,000 or something, you know?
Yeah.
The expense problem has been a big one lately for me. It's, you know, a lot of things are just out of the range where I go, I would do that just for fun.
Yes.
But, right. You know, it's a little too much. And then I have to be realist with myself about what would I actually use.
Exactly.
You know, I've thought about buying I've been on iOS now for a number of years, and I've always thought, should I get an Android phone? I really want to play with a modern Android phone. And then I have to come to grips with the fact I would not take it places with me. I just don't feel like taking two phones everywhere. And so it would stay home, and I would go, this was a waste of money. So
this from the man who used to
yourself sometimes.
This from the man who used to carry a dozen phones to the airport, you know, TSA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all did. We were all doing that crazy stuff years ago. But it doesn't mean it was a good idea when we were doing it years ago.
Not when we got stopped.
It just was an idea years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, even now getting through TSA is still bad for me. My wife just hates traveling with me.
I mean, because we've all seen that look, right? You're kind of peeking behind at the folks looking at your bag going through the thing and the x-ray, and they look at you and they look at your bag and they go, they kind of point to you and kind of step this way, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. Don't worry about it. That's me. I'm fine.
Yep.
I'll never forget years ago with the, you know, it took 10 minutes for a TSA agent to unload a Scotty vest and C-tag. With me helping him find all of the pockets. And then it took me 30 seconds to load it back up. And just the guy watched me do it. I'm like, no, just break back in, you know, no problem. And
I love my Scotty vest for that.
Yeah.
See, that's the only time I kind of envy you guys living in colder weathers than I do, because it's too warm to wear a Scotty vest jacket or anything. I have some Scotty vest shirts that I, you know, those short sleeve shirts, but it's not the same. No, you
can't. I travel frequently to Seattle. I would not purposely bring big bags because I can fit everything in the Scotty vest.
Yeah, I had Scotty vest jacket just for traveling. It's my second bag, you know, my second carry on, so to speak. All right, now are you using a smartwatch of any kind?
I am. So my wife did give me for a birthday, but I did ask for it. It's the Fossil Gen 5 Carlisle, I believe it is. And that's what I'm using now. I mean, it works. I mean, it's funny. You know, I like the smartwatch idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you first get it, it's one of those things, like John was saying. It's like, all right, what I really use this for? So, honestly, the thing that I use that for the most is notifications.
Yes.
That's it. Like,
yes.
Driving, it goes off. You know, my hand's already on the steering wheel. I can quickly look and see. You know, either see what it was or just reply, just say a reply and have it go out. I don't have to pull out my phone. That's been the biggest thing. Like, I loaded some apps on there and I could never get it to work right. And I'm just like, okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's basically just a stylus watch and a notification spot.
Is the Fossil an Android Wear watch or?
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. I'm kind of like where Android is with the Android Wear support. Like, you know, it's like, are they invested in it? Are they not? I'm not sure. And so to me, I'm like, well, I don't want to really invest too much until I see where else they're going to be going with this. Because before that, I had the Moto 360 watch, which worked out good, too. And yeah. I really did like it. But, you know, it's like, where are some of the features? Like, I look at the Apple Watch and some of the features they have in there are really nice and practical. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Some of the features they have in there are very practical. And I'm like, you know, the Android Wear stuff is like they've had some of this stuff, but it's kind of like everything else with Android. Some things they may have had for a while, but they haven't refined on it. Then Apple will come and refine on it, and then you know they would turn back around and go, oh, okay, now we have this, and it's just the back and forth thing. So that's what I'm using right now.
Well, you know, I tell you, Eric. Go ahead, John.
Well, it's just funny because you're talking about Apple and the refining of things. And yesterday, I was talking to my wife about, you know, the long rumored Apple eyeglasses.
Yeah.
Supposedly, you know, somewhere in development. And I said that would be, because I wear contacts most of the time during the week. And I said that would be the only thing that would get me to try smart glasses is if Apple came out with them. And she goes, oh, you're such an Apple fanboy. And I said, no, it's just I know that they would work.
Yeah.
You know, I know that if Apple comes out with it, it's going to be a decent first gen product. And then Google and Samsung, they might come out with a version that's just as good. But it's almost like they need the bar raised up high enough where they go, okay, we can't just ship a half-baked product. Yeah. And the Android ecosystem, I just feel so bad watching it because a lot of the products that come out are half-baked products and there's no better product to kind of push the product out there.
Yeah. And the companies that do have, for Android, the better product, it's like they're not trying to raise the bar on themselves for the next product. It's like, you know, it's just like the same things over and over and over. So
yeah, well, it's getting harder to get revolutionary these days, I think, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. In anything.
Well, I just wish that Google would commit to Wear OS.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just, you know, make it a true Apple Watch competitor. Yeah. But it's always they have Microsoft disease. They take it about 90% of the place it needs to be and just say, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
And, you know, but no, take it a little farther and you'll be competitive.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say to Eric that I think the wearables, you know, watch type wearables will be more important to you when you get older, like me. Because at that point, it's like a health thing, you know? Like, am I still alive? Oh, yes, there we go. You know, got a pulse, got a heartbeat. Okay, I'm good. And I'll tell you a story. I don't know if I told you this story, you know, over email or Facebook or anything. So about a couple of years ago, I went to my doctor for a regular checkup. And I go, hey, you know, you've hit the age where we should do an EKG and these kind of things on you. I go, okay, that's fine. And so, you know, they put the sensors on you, right, all over your chest and other places, and you're lying down and the nurse says, uh-oh. and I'm like, what, uh-oh? She goes, you just flatlined. I says, does that mean I'm dead? He goes, yeah, I don't feel dead.
Right now, I'm still talking to you.
I'm a ghost? Congratulations.
But anyway, it turned out to be a malfunction. I'm not dead. I'm just, you know, I'm like the cat guy. I'm not a cat judge. I'm not actually
your
dead.
Demise were greatly exaggerated.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But
did I share Todd on the podcast about my Aura ring and the COVID vaccine?
Well, I remember you got the ring, but I didn't hear about the vaccine part.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been wearing this Aura ring now for about almost a year, because I got it at the beginning of the pandemic almost, mm-hmm. back in, I think, March, April. No, I think it was May, actually, but whatever. You know, I was able to get my first shot of the Moderna vaccine couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
Because our vaccine site had extras, and I got on the hey, can you show up really quickly list?
Nice.
And so I did, and I had no side effects, but my ring went absolutely nuts, telling me, hey, something's up.
Really?
Your body temperature is a little bit up at night. Your heart rate variability is down from where you're supposed to be. Are you sick? Because it looks like you're getting sick. And then two days after, it was just fine and back to normal.
That's fascinating.
Really interesting to see how, I'll take a picture of the trends and you guys can see what it did. But
hey, at least
it was how I knew I did. Yeah, it was how I knew I didn't get a placebo. Because it was truly it going, something is weird with you right now.
But
Do you know it? The
interesting thing to me is that, you know, it wasn't something you noticed in yourself, but there were physiological changes that were measurable. I mean, significantly measurable.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating to me.
And that's where I think that, you know, the wearables in that sense, that where they really do have the leg up for, you know, give you pre-warnings or things like that.
Because,
you know, he took the shot. He was, to himself, he felt totally fine. But yet, this measurable device is saying, hey, something's out of the mm-hmm. norm.
Yeah. I told this to John before I bought my first AirPod, which I thought were just horrendously expensive. And as John remembers, I refused to buy one for a long time. And I said, you know, John, I'd buy one if it would take my body temperature metrics when I'm wearing them. Because then I'd have a baseline, you know, like if I use it once a day or something, right? Instead of having to take my temperature or whatever. And this is before COVID. So, you know, this is just something that I thought was interesting. But I really wish they would do that, because I think that'd be a really interesting way to kind of do that, you know, the whole biometric stuff for yourself. But anywho. Okay. Now, I think neither John nor I have an action camera, but several of our friends, you know, Arnie, right, puts it on his DJI drone, right, and I think John has a gimbal. I don't. I'm still kind of debating which one I can afford. Basically, are you into any of the? I mean, you've got little kids, as I recall.
Yeah, I do. And all I have is just the drone right now. You know, I have the DJI drone, so you know that's. I guess that can, you know, fit into that category.
Yep.
So that's what I use it for, a lot of stuff. And it was a Christmas present while I first got it, but then I'm also getting into, you know, using it for, you know, just cinematic things and this thing, you know, just getting cool shots. I mean, I used it when I had solar put on the house. So,
oh, neat.
You know, as they're putting the stuff up there, and you know, I'm flying up and I'm getting overhead shots of, you know, they're putting the stuff down. So that was, it was interesting in doing that. I mean, and honestly, the drone worked out good too for like, we have some times here in, you know, Eastern PA, we have these winds that come through and they're just like ridiculous. And it's like, there's been a couple of times where I'm looking up down, you know, from downstairs. I'm going, man, it looks like I'm missing a shingle or two.
Ooh.
So I send the drone up.
Yeah.
Well, yep, I am. So then I go up and fix it or whatever. But it does help in that aspect.
Wow. I never thought about that. Oh, and as you know, in Hawaii, we do get hurricanes, so we get high winds every now and then, too.
I just like I'm missing a shingle, and I'm thinking, you know, that could also be a great thing in a horror movie. Gee, it looks like there's a killer outside. I'll send the drone out and take a look, see what's going on out there.
So here's a perfect story of a funny story, rather, of a great drone ruse. So, you know, just we was doing some stuff, you know, just for, you know, electoral stuff, just, you know, going to election just to, you know, vote. And the lines were just long. Yeah. And I'm not too far from the polling place. And I remember, you know, people, we have like the town Facebook page. Yeah. And everybody's saying how long the lines is. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to sit in line that long, this and that. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm well within my radius of where the drone to go. Yeah. So I sent the drone over. And I looked over there. And I go, oh, look, it's clear. It's nobody there. And so I get there. And I literally walk in, and so I'm telling people inside. I'm just like, I sent the drone over. And the police officer's like, that's the best news I have heard for the drone yet.
What they don't know is if the drone had seen a line, you would have just had the drone stand in line. You know, just hold your spot.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Inch up. Last minute, you show up. Okay, here's my drone. And save my spot.
Thank you.
Okay, now. Are you going to make us jealous with your internet connection? Because Elio just says, I got it 1 gig. You know, it's whatever.
I wish. I just got off the phone with the cable company yesterday asking, like, hey, what more do you have in my area? So mine is like, I think I have, they have higher tiers, but for me, I need more upload than I need download.
Oh, interesting.
So that's always been the thing. So I think my upload is only like 15 or 20 megabits up, and I have 300 now. But I use it down, the only time I really, really, really use the download is if I'm pulling from, like, you know, a Linux distro site or something.
I was going to say, grabbing an ISO or something. Yeah,
that's the only time. But upload, I definitely need more of because, you know, I send stuff down to the other location.
Right, right.
And just in the things I do, so, like, even my phone, when I leave the house, my phone automatically VPNs back into the house. So then now my internet connection for my phone then runs through all the stuff I have set up at home. So in that instance, it would be nice to have more. And I called the cable company right now. They say that 20 megabits up is their limit. I can get the 1,000 down, but it's really the opposite I need.
Yeah. You almost need symmetric. Like, didn't Google Fiber? I mean, when it existed, they had symmetric 1 gig, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in Fios, but they never built out this area in Fios.
Yeah. Well, that's a story everywhere. You know, people say, oh, we're going to have this, we're going to have that, and it never really happened.
Yeah. Now, luckily, where I bought this house at, we actually had the luxury of having two cable companies service us.
Oh.
That was, you know, you don't usually hear about that very often. Yeah. But I am glad one cable company that came in later is what we had, is the one that was here, because if it wasn't, that would have probably swayed my buying decision, because I've had the other company, and let's just say you couldn't even play Xbox games.
In Hawaii, we've got one cable company and one telephone company providing wired broadband. So, but I think to my house, you can only get one of them. Only the cable company, I think. You can get DSL.
Where I'm at, we have this very strange setup where we have a decent cable company in terms of download and even upload speeds. I think I usually get about 20 up and 150 down, so I'm doing fairly well. But we also, the other option in town is AT&T DSL.
Mm.
And they advertise it as if it is comparable.
Yeah.
And it is so funny talking to friends around here that just for whatever reason got AT&T and they're complaining about this and that. And I don't really got to go to cable, you know, just go to the cable and you'll be fine. And it is just night and day differences. Literally like they have taken a 20-year leap.
Yeah.
Because they have.
Yeah.
In connectivity.
Yeah.
But it just cracks me up seeing how AT&T advertises it down here as, you know, so fast and lightning speeds. It's like, you are...
Well, you know,
having... just blatantly lying at this point to everyone out here.
Having worked for a telephone company and been part of their DSL rollout in the 90s, I can tell you with pretty certainty that DSL is awesome if you live about 100 meters from the central office.
Yes.
If you live any further than that, you got a problem.
And your phone lines are not more than 20 or 30 years old.
Yeah.
You have to be close to the central office and newer phone lines.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, my in-laws are 45 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, where you would think they'd be able to get decent speeds.
Yeah.
And they're on DSL. DSL is the only thing they can get because cable does not come down their road.
Wow.
And they are in year 2000 speeds.
Yep.
And my mother-in-law doesn't believe that everyone else can get faster speeds than her. And I have to remind her, oh, you are truly the exception. Because she's been going, well, how do people even work remotely? You know, with our speeds, you know, only one person can be on at a time.
Yeah.
You're in the, you know, extreme left end of the distribution in terms of speeds right now. Congratulations. You're in like the 1% on that side.
Starlink's so interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to... Go ahead, Eric.
I was thinking, with that rolling out, that may open up more. And I'm just wondering how that's going to be. Because that's always been a thing that, you know, the different companies coming out. And it's like, oh, well, this is going to help for the last mile customers and this and that. And then it doesn't happen. So it'll be interesting to see if this really takes off the way they're saying. And if so, that would definitely be a way to even things out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been teleworking also, Eric? Or are you an on-prem guy?
So for the beginning of the shutdown, like the casinos closed down.
Yeah.
Except for IT.
Ah.
So, So everyone else were able to sit home and do nothing. And our workload got tremendously harder, part because of the fact that it's hard enough already when we're open to do anything because you can't do anything to disrupt the floor.
Right.
And you know, there's all things that go wrong. There's updates that need to be happening. There's servers that need to be rebooted.
Yeah.
And it's always a fight trying to get that to happen during regular normal times and regular maintenance time. So when this happened, it was just like, oh, remember all those things that we couldn't do before?
We can fix it.
All right now. And
do everything immediately.
Yeah, it was just like, I was like, oh, I could update this, I could update that. There's no customers to worry about. But it was a significant amount of work. But then everything came back, and then, you know, we were then in office like 2 days out of the week.
Yeah.
2 days out of the week and work from home 2 days. So that's kind of what the schedule is now. So I normally work from home 2 days. But because of the cyber school, because that's what we have the kids in, they're in full cyber school. So here we have an option. You can either do the kids in a hybrid where they go into the school like 2 days a week, which now they're changing that. They're going to make it totally 5 days now.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do 100% cyber, which is what we're doing. So even in itself, that presents, you know, a certain set of challenges just because of the fact that, you know, a lot of times when I'm cyber schooling them, I'm also working.
Right.
And, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot going on.
Yeah. I know one of the most common things we didn't do a whole heck of a lot of – we use Microsoft Teams at work. And we really weren't using its communication facilities all that much when we were all in the office. But once we went home, it was so funny because now you hear everybody's kids and their dogs. And it's just hilarious, you know?
It's funny because it's like, you know, I'm used to getting on conference calls and my normal reaction is, and this is what I've been working with the kids and still in the window. Yeah. They're pretty good. Yeah. It's like, get on the conference call, announce, hit mute. Yeah. And then, you know, wait until something you need to say, unmute, say what you got to say, mute back.
Yeah.
And they're getting it pretty good now, but it's interesting just seeing the progression of that, you know.
It is, right? I mean, and I know I have one coworker who's, I think, son is 5 or 6 years old, who's probably smart as a whip because he knows exactly when when his mom is most busy and is probably going to just say yes to, you know, whatever he's asking on a call, you know.
Well, you know, and earlier this week I had in one of my, so I've been teaching in person once a week and then on Zoom the other class meeting each week this semester. Last semester I was doing more high flex and just this and that. Yeah. But I actually had it happen where a student wasn't muted when she thought she was, which is always, you know, you hear these stories. And I was going to let her go for a while, you know, just see how long it took, because the conversation she was having with her friend was pretty benign. And then the conversation turned, and I had to hit mute very quickly. And I'll throw in the chat the direct message I sent to the student, because I basically said to them, hey, I muted you after the first expletive.
Yeah.
You know, FYI. And I told her that because I thought, you know, because your classmates heard the first part of that.
Yeah.
I figured you should know that I got you the rest. And she sent back a sufficiently mortified, you know, reply.
I got your back.
I had your back somewhat. I let you go until the conversation got to the point where you didn't want anyone to hear it. But it's interesting. It's all these things that I don't think we ever thought we'd have to deal with in terms of human relations, but it's unique.
And like 2 weeks ago, I had my very first Pocket Teams dial. Not where I did it, but
it was
interesting because everybody got this, you know, you have a Teams video call.
Yeah.
And I joined it, and it was my director. She hit the button, and it called, like, all these people. And we just watched her as she walk around through the floor and everything.
We've had that, too. I'm most irritated when people butt dial you at 2 a.m. in the morning, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've had that happen. But, yeah, but you know what? We haven't as many those kind of accidental dials as I thought we would have. I would have thought we would have had, like, you know, hundreds of them by, you know, 1 year in. But it's probably been a handful, you know, half a dozen, something like that.
I mean, it's like when it first started, there's so much going on. I think people are really getting more of the hang of things now.
Yeah.
And the grasp of it. So it's good. Like, I even noticed with, like, our school system here, you know, when everything first happened.
Yeah.
They didn't have any type of cyber policy. So they just threw something together.
Oh, yeah.
But it was decent. And then even now, they, you know, for this regular school year, they put more thought into what they're doing. Like, we're, you know, kind of, you know, doing well as far as our school system, because with our children, their instruction is always live led.
Yeah.
You know, from the beginning. And I talked to some of my coworkers at work who were in different areas, like different townships. And like on one coworker, he was just like, no, his daughter, who was the same age as my daughter, the teacher gives them a PowerPoint and is like, here, have at it.
Really?
They don't get any live instruction. And I'm like, wow.
Wow.
So it's interesting, just because, and even when I sit with our kids and watch what they're doing, I feel bad too for some of the kids, because some of the kids may be in daycare because the parents have to work.
Right, right.
And so they don't get the extra attention that they may need for, like, having assignments, or if they don't understand something, you know, you hear them in there and they're like, well, I don't have a helper. And so it's real interesting to see the different dynamics of that and how it plays out.
Yeah. And I guess we don't appreciate it as much, but, you know, public school system is the great equalizer.
Yes.
So, you know, it's...
Yep.
It really is.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, folks will be able to get their kids back into school at some point. I guess where you are, it's your choice. And some people are back in. Yeah. So that's a good thing to have a choice. Here, I don't have my daughter's an adult. My one and only daughter's an adult, so I'm really not in tune with what the schools are doing. I mean, people tell me, you know, and then I kind of I kind of grimace and go, oh, that sounds tough, and I'm glad I'm not doing it, you know. but I can sympathize, that's for sure. You know, it's the closest thing I had is when my daughter was six. Yeah, I guess she was six. It was 9/11. But it was not direct impact to us, because we in Hawaii were so geographically distant from the event that we were affected, like all planes stopped and stuff like that. But everything else is normal, right? So, it was weird. It was difficult explaining things, but, you know, it wasn't the direct impact that everybody has during the pandemic. So So.
Yeah, my daughter says stuff. She was like, "Oh, we can't do this because it's the coronavirus." So this and
yeah.
that. So at least she knows, and it, you know, it's just interesting, you know. But at least now, because of like mobility and you know, FaceTime and all these different ways that people can interact, at least they have that now. Because I'm thinking about if they had this prior, where you didn't have so much easy ways to chat with people,
right?
You know, you at least get, you still get interaction and seeing people's facial expressions and, and things like that now, because of, you know, the cameras and the, you know, having a fast enough internet speeds and you know, being able to do all these different things. You know, I think if this would happen when I was like in you know, elementary school, this was like,
oh, I did nothing. Not even, you know, I know you're a lot younger than me, but you know, I was just thinking if it happened even 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
When broadband was like a megabit down, you know, down was a megabit, right? If you're lucky, could have been less. And, you know, we just didn't have Teams and Zoom and, you know, we had Skype. Yeah, we had Skype, but it was voice only. But it's voice only. It just would have been, it would have been impossible to do a lot of this stuff. So.
And even if we had video at the time, you think about if you have a number, you know, if you're working from home and then your child is on, you know, thing, you just think about the bandwidth that that's chewing up, and yeah, it would have been bad.
You'd make a choice.
Well, if anyone wants to, know about that, just talk to my in-laws, because that is exactly what they dealt with through lockdown last year. Because my brother-in-law and sister-in-law were living in their garage apartment and using the same internet connection, and it was. It was one of those things where people just had the timeshare. It was, you know, okay, I'm going to use the internet from, you know, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., and then you're going to use it from 7 to 2, and then, you know, I think my mother-in-law couldn't read the newspaper until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because that was when she could finally download that day's paper from their local newspaper's website. It just was, it was bad. And it doesn't help that I've been telling them forever to reboot their router every night, because they don't. That would help it a lot. But it's crazy to look into that and go, that's not tenable for more than a month, maybe, before you go nuts.
Yeah, that is wild. Yeah, and we forget, you know, a lot of people still do have DSL and not even, you know, regular DSL, well, not VH DSL or anything like that.
And my in-laws also have the problem where they live in a valley, so they get no cell service at their house.
Yes.
They have a, they have a Verizon microcell that goes through the DSL connection.
Yeah.
So really, it is just the DSL connection they have.
That is wild. Yeah, in Hawaii, we've got where the island I live on is not so much of an issue, but on the Big Island, which is the one with the active volcanoes, at one point, I haven't looked at the data recently, but at one point, over 20% of the populated areas did not have any wired broadband capability at all. I mean, zero options. So and so they're like, you know, on Verizon's. This is before they had unlimited plan. There was on like Verizon's really expensive. Verizon Wireless is really expensive back then. 10 gigabytes? Was it that much? Might have been 10 gig. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had a 10. Yeah, they had an 8 and a 10.
Yeah. And that was their broadband, you know?
Yeah.
And they were trying to do business and school and all kinds of stuff with that. It was pretty wild. So we are fortunate that we live in relatively well-serviced areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if we don't have 1 gig.
Yeah, I would love 1 gig.
Yeah, yeah.
If Bryce says, you can't use that, oh, I can use it.
Especially you, Eric. Especially you. I was going to say, though, you know, we're talking about infrastructure. I live in an area that's, I think the copper is still paper wrapped.
Oh, I worked in an area like that. I lived in Virginia. They still had, it was pulp, paper wrapped copper that was in lead lined sheathing.
Yeah. When about 2 miles from here, there was a copper line was backhoed about, I don't know, 25 years ago, right? The area's backhoed, and my boss happened to have the day off, and he was taking his run, and he, you know, spotted the telephone technicians there, and they knew him, you know, so he walked over to goes, what's happening? Oh, we got backhoed, you know? And he looked down, he saw the paper wrap, you know, the big bundle, the 2000 bundle.
Mm-hmm.
It was all paper wrapped. He says, ooh, you got to tone all of those, don't you?
Yep. Yeah. I've had my experience of that. Not fun times.
So, yeah. Ah, the good old days, which are not that old. I mean, I bet you if we dug up around here, we'd still have paper wrap near my home. But, anywho, not too worried about it. It's been fairly reliable. No, I take that back. I've lost phone service last year, late 2020. I lost phone service like 3-4 times. And I mean, like days. It was down for like days. Wireline was down. Yeah, so I complained and whatever. But
that's usually like the one you always
exactly
count on being up.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why I still have it, right? That's why I still pay $40 a month or whatever, even though, you know, we have cell service now in our home and we have multiple phones. But that's kind of like, you know, the hurricane hits, cell tower batteries go down. You know, this is the one thing that should be working, right? But anywho. Okay. Hey, anything else you want to tell us about what's going on with you? Any tech hobbies or anything, any IoT things you've been fussing with?
I do a lot of IoT stuff now. A lot of building my own sensors and projects and getting into the home automation and things like that. So that's fun. New thing I want to take a look at until it's like the LoRaWAN. It's a couple of people I know that they've played around with it, and they're saying it's kind of nice for getting IoT stuff, you know, information around. So that's something to take a look at. It's one of those things that's like, we wouldn't use that at work at all, but it's one of those interesting things to me, you know, especially being a ham radio operator and things like that. So I can.
I didn't know you're a ham radio operator.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I got the license in 1988, matter of fact.
Wow.
Yeah, I got my license, and it was more. It was more of one of those things because my father was like, "You're getting licensed," because I had the FCC show up at our house one day.
Uh-oh. You're like young Sheldon.
It's the reason why my father would never, he never let me get a modem, not until I was in college.
What?
A regular modem for a computer.
Yeah.
He was just so afraid that the government would show up. I mean, they did, but it was FCC this time. But, you know, I always had an interest in that. So I did. I went and got my license and, you know, went through the whole upgrade. And, you know, it was at a time where you had to take the Morse code test in order to, you know, get your license. So I passed my 13. Actually, I took the test for the extra. So, you know, at that time, amateur radio, you had the novice, you had a technician, you had the general class. General class allowed you to be able to talk voice-wise to a lot of different places. Oh, before that, you only had like one band you could talk on with voice. Everything else was through Morse code. And like, unless you was a technician, you can use short, like VHF radios. But the general class license allowed you to get on what they call the HF band. So everything below, you know, the CB frequencies and stuff. So you could talk literally around the world. But then I got the general, which required a 13 word a minute Morse code test. Then I took my advanced class and got that. And then I took the extra class. The extra class required a 20 word a minute exam.
Wow.
Along with the written. So I aced the written part, and then I missed the code by one question. And they give you a year to go back.
Yeah.
But I was 16th time, and I'm like, so radio or 16 years? Ooh, just so.
Yeah.
That was that. So I'm actually still advanced class, which the FCC kind of got rid of that license. Yeah. But it's been good, because I still talk to a lot of people around the world. I have a setup in my car, you know, just huge antennas, just ridiculous, and they don't want to on this car. It's like, they literally say, like, you look like one of those like bumper cars going down the road.
So you got like a big whip on your car or something that's like tied down or something?
Yeah. Oh, it's, well, yeah, so the antenna itself is 8 feet tall. First 3 feet is like maybe of a 2.5-inch diameter aluminum, polished aluminum, but then it goes into the coil, which is, that's the meat and potatoes, because the frequency you're working on, antennas nominally should be 60, anywhere from, you know, really 40 to like 100 and something feet to properly work.
Yeah.
And of course, you can't get that going on a car, so they put it inside of a coil. So then the coil is on mine, it's like 4 inches in diameter, which is about like a foot and a half of coil, and then on top of that, it's like a 5 foot antenna. So it's always fun. You go, especially down, you got to look at bridges and stuff, because I think I have a, when I have the antenna on, I have like a 12 or 13 foot clearance screen. So that's the only thing you got to look out for. But it's interesting, though. I mean, it's nothing more satisfying than just driving somewhere and you're talking to a guy who's like maybe in, like, you know, Europe or in Japan or anywhere in the world. And you're literally working this person over the airwaves from your car.
Yeah. Plus, you're all set for disaster.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, disaster happens. I'm, you know, it's many different ways you can get on and and do different things. So that's, you know, between that, like I said, the IoT stuff. So playing around with a lot of home automation stuff, and you know, just getting data back and forth from the phone, just having the house react and stuff. So like, you know, we leave the home, the last person to leave this house turns itself into home away mode and sets the heat or air to whatever. And, you know, first person gets home, the things change and the home reacts to your presence and things like that. And video editing, audio editing. I have a lot of hobbies. I found that a lot of high-priced hobbies is a bad thing.
I didn't know you were a DJ, because I knew about Ray's DJing, but I didn't know about your DJing. That's not cheap either.
No, that's not cheap. And like Ray, I was listening to him. He was just like, yeah, I have my SL1200. I was like, I have mine too. I got mine. I have two of them. When I first got mine, my first one was a birthday present from my parents, I think when I was 13. And at that time, when I got it, they paid, I think, $350 for it.
That's a lot of money.
But then when I bought mine, like myself, a little while after that, I think I paid like $500. Now these things are going for like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. It really is. So and yeah, the equipment for that stuff is not cheap either. You know, between the speakers, the controllers, you know, the software, and also the music. So, you know, I purchased my music. I still have my records and things like that, and I like. You know, you can do streaming with some of the stuff. Some of the DJ things now are having it, so you can stream from Spotify the song and then have it inside the set. Yeah. I haven't done any of that part yet, but then I'll also do music production. So that in itself is not cheap either. So dealing with, you know, I like to do sound for video and sound for shows and things like that. So, yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. You guys, you know, you and Ray, and you guys make me look like a slacker, man.
Nah, but you've done so much already. We're just trying to catch up.
I'm ready to retire, man. I got a countdown timer on my phone.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah, Todd is retiring in 656 days, 4 hours, 23 minutes, wait, and 17 wait, wait. Seconds.
Did you get that right?
You have it? Wait.
Let me check that. Did you synchronize with mine? Yeah, you're right.
At some point, I did.
Yeah. See, I don't actually have it in my head. I got to go look at my app.
Well, as do I. Don't worry about me. It's not like I'm memorizing your retirement date. I just have it on the countdown app on my phone and watch. So I know when you're going to start messaging me and going, I'm available all week.
All week, any day, any time.
You want to do Wednesday at 2 o'clock? We can do that, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Eric, it has been great having you. Is there anything else you want to share, or is it something you want to promote? I don't know if you were just doing a website or whatever.
I was listening to Ray when he was talking about he has his Twitch channel. So I have a Twitch channel and everything set up too, but I don't have anything on there because that's the one thing. You have all these hobbies and things, but then between that and family, the amount of time to get and do some of these other things, like I would like to do some, you know, just mix shows and things like that. Right. So I do things on the side, but not in that form. But eventually I probably will start trying to get into that. So on Twitch, I think I have two accounts. Like one is Eric Hicks, and then one is just That Kid, which is like That Kid was always the thing that I had on all the forums everywhere. I try to keep the same thing. It's like on Xbox, it's any platform I'm on, it's like That Kid. But then I started to realize, I was like, wait a minute, if I have that, then nobody really know my name. They wouldn't know who I am. So so I've been trying to incorporate both and branch out a little bit more.
Yeah, I hear you though about, you know, the trying to divvy up your time, you know, as John knows, because he was the cause of the problem for one. I bought my Crow Pi last January, I think. Still haven't really used it. And I can't blame him for the second one, but I bought the Raspberry Pi 400. I just got that the other week.
And yeah, I saw when you got that.
Yeah, I played with it, and, you know, the portable monitor. And, okay, here's the thing. Here's the weird thing, Eric. So I thought to myself, self? Okay, you got a portable LCD, a 15-inch portable, but it's just a hassle to set up this thing for a couple of reasons. And also it had a mini HDMI input into the display. So I had to go buy a special cable from micro to mini. Anyway, So, well, self, you've got a ton of monitors, you know, just around, but they're all so old, they're not HDMI. They're DVI. You know, there's no HDMI in.
Yeah.
So, this just arrived this morning.
Oh, look at that.
So, I don't know if you can see it, but it's
I see the corner of it is blended. Oh, there we go.
So, this is this is
totally disappeared.
Oh, yeah, this is a I should turn off my background. But anyway, so this is a I think it's a 12-inch portable display. I don't think it's USB powered, but it does have it is kind of it's smaller, so it's easier to set up on my kitchen table, which is where I tend to do things, and it does have an HDMI port, unlike my old all my old displays. So I didn't realize my displays were that old. You know, like they don't have HDMI. What's up with that?
Well, then you sometimes you may get a display that has DVI and then they'll have display port, and you're like,
yeah.
I looked at those 400 Raspberry Pi 400s. I actually bought 5 of the Picos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when they came out. For more of this, like, I know I'll probably use it in some type of IoT project.
Yeah, just toss them somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, and for the price, I'm like, I just order a couple of them. So I've been dabbling in that part of it, and also dabbling just in, so like in my car, I end up making a head unit. So I made an Android head unit out of an Odroid SBC, single board computer. Mm-hmm. And I literally took a 7-inch display and hooked it, set it all up inside. And thing is that I had to hack the CAN bus network in my car. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And because my car didn't, you know, you put the key in normally, you know, before cars you have like, you know, at the accessory mode start, and that would give you different voltage outputs like somewhere in the car. But in my car, everything, and actually a lot of cars are like this now, especially ones made after 2008, everything is driven off of this data bus, and it's normally either 2 to 3 data buses in the car. So I've been spending a lot of time hacking that, which the Raspberry Pi 400 would come in handy with because of the fact that everything is kind of built in. And like if you had a screen, you can put like a CAN bus adapter on there, and then you can sit there and, you know, hack away at the bus without having to have another computer, you know, with you or whatever. You can have everything just done on that one device.
And you know, I bought, it's funny, and I bought the Raspberry Pi 400, not for what you're doing, because that's way above my head, but because it reminded me of my very first computer that I bought in my own money. That was the TRS-80 Model 1. Which was a keyboard that the computer was inside the keyboard, right?
I love those things. When I worked at Radio Shack, I was like, that was one of the things I used to always want. And they had like, four lines on the display or somewhere thereabouts. And yeah, those things were great. I always wanted one.
Yeah. Oh, that's the TRS-8100 Model 1. The one with just the LCD built in?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was the, I have the very first microcomputer Radio Shack ever sold, which is called the Model 1. And you had to have you had to go buy its display. You couldn't even plug in a TV. But the computer was in the keyboard. And so you got a keyboard and a display. Anyway, FYI, by the way, if you ever buy one, the Raspberry Pi 400 is overclocked out of the box. Yeah. So it's a little bit faster than Raspberry Pi 4 that, you know, you just buy as a module or the Pico or whatever. But lots of fun. So anyway, I got a new toy. And I'm hoping it'll motivate me to actually find my Raspberry Pi 400, which I put away last weekend, and go play with it. But Eric, it was so great to talk to you after 10 years.
Yes.
Let's do it a little bit more often, because as I told Elio, I might be dead in 10 years from now. So, you know.
You got to wait a little while longer. You got to retire and have fun doing all that stuff afterwards.
But we'll have you back on, Elio, Ray, and a whole bunch of folks. We're trying to get through a bunch of our friends, like yourselves, that we just haven't, for whatever reason, caught up with in years. I think a lot of this is because everybody's been so busy and not at home. You know, it's like, oh, Todd, Sunday? No, we can't do it on Sunday, dude. You know?
Well, that's like, you know, I talked to Steve Hughes and Don. It's always one of those things. We got to get together. And we're always trying. Before, it used to be, we got to try to get together. Let's go to these trade shows, and then we can, you know, all link up and stuff.
Right.
And now with COVID, it's like, okay, that's out. So.
No trade shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's This has been my way of reaching out, you know. I was telling John at the beginning of the year, it's like, man, we got to talk to our old friends more, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we just got to do it. So we'll...
Because that's what I always loved about the summit, you know, get to see everybody. Yeah. And just hang out and just talk, you know.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we always took the weirdest pictures of each other at the summit. I don't mean like, yes. I don't mean like bad weird, just like, what the heck was going on with that lighting on you, you know? And there's one shot of John took of me. I look like a freaking ghost or something. Remember the spirit, shot?
You're talking about when you ascended into the
sky. Yeah, that one. I'm like glowing or something. You know, it's like I look like an ectoplasm.
It was right when Stargate SG-1 was really popular, and you look like you were ascending, you know. And that was, I think, the joke. It's Ascended Todd.
And I think Don posted a photo of you, Eric, just recently. God, like, yes. I don't know what that lighting was weird. It looked like a horror really show. It's like, oh, Eric's running from that. you know, like a Godzilla or something. You know,
I think I had turned into that shot. Like, I think Steve had called me, and I had turned, and when the flash went off, it was just like that was the result.
Yeah, it's like a Toho monster movie. But yeah. Oh, there's a shot of me ascending.
It is.
Yeah, that was you ascending into the.
Yeah.
You as the very moment your soul came out, Todd.
Yeah.
In case you're curious, that's when it left.
that's when it left, when Mike became soulless. Okay, well, yeah. Any rate, it was great talking to Eric. I'm glad that John got his first COVID shot. I'm still waiting for mine. I am spreading the unfounded rumor that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the one shot, also makes your hair turn dark again. So I'm hoping to get that one. But anyway, we'll have you back on again, Eric. This was a lot of fun. It was great catching up with you.
Yeah, and
Learning stuff about you I didn't know, like you're a ham operator. But we will talk again.